All right, so we're in Daniel chapter 3. Let's go ahead and read the first 18 verses, and then we'll make some comments. Daniel chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. And he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent to gather together the satraps, the deputies, the governors, and the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king set up. Then the satraps, the deputies, the governors, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the province was gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the herald cried out aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. And whosoever falls not down and worships shall the same hour be cast in the midst of the fiery furnace." Therefore, at the time when all the people heard the band play, they fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. The reason why I did that, there's a lot of repetition here in this musical instrument thing. "Wherefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came near, and they brought accusations against the Jews. And they answered and said to Nebuchadnezzar, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man that shall hear the music shall fall down and worship the golden image.'" Verse 11, "And whosoever falls not down and worships shall be cast in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded you. They have not thy gods, nor have not regarded you. They serve not your gods, nor worship the golden image which you set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said unto them, 'Is it of purpose, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you serve not my God, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now, if you be ready at the time when you hear the music, you shall fall down and worship the image which I have made. Well, if you worship not, then you shall be in the same hour cast in the midst of the fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?' Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said unto the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto you, O king, that we shall not serve your gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up.'" So here we have, in Daniel chapter 3, the first 18 verses, the golden image which was set up by King Nebuchadnezzar. Now, on your first question of your study guide, the size of the image and the critic's objection to the authenticity of the text. All right. According to most scholars, the cubic or the statue was 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide. That is, so far, what most conservative scholars seem to think of the image. It was 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide. And liberal, they will say impossible. Well, impossible, maybe, but it's not imposing. It could have been, as some have suggested, a form of a obelisk, 9 feet wide at the bottom and then tapers up to the 9 feet. One historian records a statue of a god that was 40 foot high. Another, of course, we know the Colossus of Rhodes. If you haven't seen an image of it, it was 70 feet high, and it was quite the It was one of the seven ancient wonders of the world. So it wasn't impossible. Imposing, yes, but it wasn't impossible to have something that high. Also, another thing to think of, notice in verse 1, it was in the plain of Dura, which is about 12 miles southeast of where the city of Babylon was located. It is here in this area that they have found, or they had excavated, a pedestal-like thing, square, that was 45 feet high. 45 foot square and 25 feet high. So there's part of the 90 feet if this was the pedestal on which it was put upon. So the liberal tries to say that this is impossible. And remember, they do not want predicted prophecy, so they deny that Daniel wrote the book. Another thing that the liberal will come up with says it's impossible to make a solid gold statue 90 feet high. Once again, where does it say solid gold? Doesn't say solid gold. Could have been gold plated. It could have been partially plated. So the argument that they have is not very good. As we get into the text, 2 to 3 invitations are set out. Now, I want you to understand that with these rulers, governors, satraps, and all these other people, they would bring a great throng of people with them. So this would be quite the event. There would be thousands upon thousands of people at this dedication of the golden statue. The psychological effect alone of such a great crowd would be great for the ego of Nebuchadnezzar. One of the reasons for something like this, and you'll see this too if you pursue this on your own, you'll find that there are different time frames for this study or for this time that this happened. Probably why the golden image was set up, and it could have been a golden image of a man. I forgot to point that out. It could have been a golden image of a man, or it could have been some kind of obelisk or something. Probably the reason why this was set up to show Nebuchadnezzar's God's victories over the gods of all the other nations that had been captured at this time. So there was a reason for this. It wasn't just Nebuchadnezzar had some extra gold laying around and wanted to make a statue or some kind of image. It was probably to show that his God was, it was probably to show that his God was the greater God over all the countries that they had conquered at that time. Verses 4 through 7, we have the herald's cry. It's a pretty poor message to fall down and worship a golden image. And then here too, in the list of the musical instruments, we have another critic claim. And that is, there is at least three instruments that are known in the Greek. And so therefore, the critic will say that Daniel had to be written somewhere around the Maccabean era, when Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes was Hellenizing the world. Now, the argument against that, and Leopold has a good argument against it, he points out that historical evidence will point out that there were contacts with the Greeks, with the Assyrians, and others in that area long before Nebuchadnezzar became king over Babylon. Assyria and Greek had trades with each other. They had outposts upon the Black Sea to shuffle the trade goods back and forth. The early musical and philosophical culture of Greece is found the influences of Semitic, Assyrian, and Babylonian culture. So the liberals' argument that there are three Greek words for some of the instruments in this text is without a whole lot of weight. Also, this is another point that I ran across, and I thought this was a very good point. If Daniel supposedly, according to the liberals, was written during the Maccabean period, when the world was Hellenized by Antiochus IV. Why wasn't all of Daniel written in the Greek language? I think that's a very good point. So there's really no arguments, and there's several more arguments. We don't waste the time. One final argument that the liberal will bring up against Daniel being an authentic character is that if you notice in verse 8, wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near, and they brought accusation against the Jews. And then they said, Nebuchadnezzar will live forever, this, that, and the other. Verse 12, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they did not fall down and worship the idols. One of the critical points that the liberal will bring out too, where was Daniel? If Daniel was a true character, where was Daniel? So there's another critical argument that the liberal comes up with, but really doesn't have any weight. Daniel had position. Nebuchadnezzar could have sent him somewhere. He could have been sick and stayed home. I mean, there's a number of reasons why Daniel wasn't there. But to come up where he wasn't here, or maybe he fell down and worshiped the image, no, that's not true too. We know that. So the liberal, really, the critic, does not have a good argument against the authenticity of the book of Daniel. Now, as we pick up in verse 13, we see the king is mad. The king is mad. Verse 14, he says, is it a purpose, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? In other words, is this true? Is this true that for all that I've done for you guys, the positions that I have granted you in my realm, is it true that you will not fall down and show honor to me and worship my gods? And then verse 15, notice, he gives them a second chance. Now, you don't see that in the original decree. In the original decree, if they did not, at the sound of the music, if they did not fall down and worship the golden image, in that very hour, they would be thrown into the fiery furnace. So he's giving them a second chance. Now look at verse 16. He says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered the king, said, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. In other words, no reason to discuss it. And then verse 17, which I think is question number 2 on your study guide, the phrase, if it be so. If it be so, our God we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. He will deliver us out of your hand, O king. This phrase, if it be so, they are not doubting his ability. We're on question 2 on your study guide. On the first page. He is not doubting God's ability. If it will serve his purpose, he will do this thing. Give you an example. Turn to 2 Kings chapter 20. Okay. 2 Kings chapter 20. In verse 1, in those days Hezekiah sick unto death. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, came unto him and said unto him, thus saith Jehovah, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. Then he, Hezekiah, turned his face to the wall, and he prayed unto Jehovah, saying, remember now, O Jehovah, I beseech you how I have walked before you in truth, and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in your sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. And it came to pass, for Isaiah was gone out into the middle part of the city, that the word of Jehovah came to him, saying, turn back and say to Hezekiah, the prince of my people, thus says Jehovah, the God of David, your father, I have heard your prayer, I have seen your tears, and behold, I will heal you. On the third day, you shall go up unto the house of Jehovah. So here we see that he is going to heal him. Uh, And he's going to give them 15 more years of life. He's going to give the king 15 more years of life. Now, the reason why I pointed this up, where we talk about Hezekiah getting 15 more years, I want you to turn to 2 Kings 21. At the last part of 20, Hezekiah dies, and Manasseh his son reigns in his stead. Chapter 21, verse 1, and Manasseh was 12 years old when he began to reign. Now Hezekiah was given 15 years. How old was Manasseh when he began to reign? 12 years old. Therefore, the 15 years that God granted unto Hezekiah was time for the Davidic lineage to continue on. The 15 years that God gave Hezekiah served his purpose, because God made a covenant with David that he would build him a house of descendants, right? And of that line would carry on. If Manasseh had died, the Davidic line would have died, then who would not have been the son of David? Jesus. So you see, if it be so, is not doubting the ability of God to save them or not in the book of Daniel. If it be so, they're saying very clearly that if it serves God's purpose, he will deliver us from the fiery furnace. And I hope everybody sees that. So question number three, we have the four things that we see in the youth response. Four things that we see in the youth response. Number one, it's a plain answer. It is a plain answer. It needed no interpretation. Nebuchadnezzar knew exactly what the three youths were saying. Now, what you and I can get out of this lesson is that you and I are to speak plainly. People in the position of being preachers and teachers should speak plainly. But at the same time, all of us should speak plainly. In other words, if people are going to learn the truth, we have to lay it out for them so that they understand. In 1 Peter 3 and 15, of course, has to do with the idea of suffering. Why do people suffer? But the same principle is true in all of our lives. We are to be ready to give answer to the hope that is within us. Why am I a Christian? Why do I live the life that magnifies Christ? Why do I want the lost to be saved? And so forth like that. So our answer should be plain. There should be no great theologian talk, I guess I should say. If you notice, the New Testament is written in the Koine Greek. It's written in the language of the common man. It's not written in the language of the scholars. It's not written in the language of the theologians. It's written in the language of the common man. It's easy to understand. So therefore, we should speak. Another thing we see in their answer, it was a natural answer. It was a natural answer. It came without force. They said what they believed. They didn't make a show out of it. You know, it is funny how sometimes a guy just be a regular old guy, regular old Joe. And then when a crowd gets up, all of a sudden he puts on the pretense. he starts giving that little bit deeper, meaningful voice. Starts putting that little holier-than-thou act upon him. We need to give a natural answer. We need to grow in areas that we lack, but in areas that we are good in, we ought to just be natural in it. There's no reason for pretense. You're not doing anything great other than relating God's word to other people. Sowing the seed. I get in discussions with a few people at work over certain things. And it's amazing how those who are not really religious and those who are in biblical era, how they point fingers at those guys on TV that are spreading the word, if you know what I mean. And they're always critical of them. And they always call them phonies and fakes. They're always got something to say about these TV ministers. And I think to myself, if I acted like that, what would they say about me? No need to pretend. No need to be dramatic. Paul's preaching one night, a boy falls out of the window, Paul goes down, heals him, goes back up, and continues preaching. No dramatics to it at all. The third thing that we see, it was a fearless answer. It was a fearless answer. Now we're here. We can discuss, well, we used to be able to discuss things about getting beat up, but sometimes that don't work out anymore. But we're usually if we disagree with somebody, we can disagree. These boys were standing right next to the furnace. They could smell the smoke. They could hear the fire crackling in the wood and stuff like that. They could feel the heat. But it was a fearless answer. We're not going to do it. And then the fourth answer that we see, it was an influential answer for the good. It was an influential answer for the good. In everything that you and I do, in our discussions with each other, in our discussion with our family members, in our discussion with our co-workers, neighbors, or whoever that we're discussing with, our answer needs to be influential for the good. We don't need to argue. We don't need to throw the I'm right, you're wrong attitude towards them. We need to just speak well. Speak clearly. The answer that we give people might determine where their soul ends up. I don't know if I've told you this story or not. I'll tell you this story now. Several years ago, my daughter was in a bowling league. She was 5 years old, you know, somewhere around there. So all the parents would get around on Saturdays. We'd go and watch the kids roll the ball down there, knock down a pin or two. And this guy that was on, one of the fathers, one of the children of my daughter's team, said, let's go play golf tomorrow. Can't. So the next Saturday, let's go play golf tomorrow. I can, yeah. Go to worship services. Finally, the word I can, I go to worship, answer, I go to church on Sunday mornings, didn't satisfy. He says, what kind of church is it that won't let you go play golf on Sundays? And I told him, I said, well, I'm a member of the Church of Christ over at the area that we were in. You know, I said, oh, you guys are some vicious people. Now, somewhere along the line, he had crossed one of the brethren who did not give an answer that was influential for the good. Somewhere, somebody said something that cut him completely off. So our answer should be influential for good. Real quick, I'll tell you another story. When I was working with FedEx in Fort Collins, every year, about twice a year, the guys would go climb Long's Peak. You know. And they always do it on Sunday. So they would ask me, I said, no, I can't go. Can't go. Same reason, because I go to services. One guy looked at me and said, well, look, man, can't you go and repent later? I said, suppose I'll fall off that mountain. He said, well, repent on the way down. But anyway, our answer should be influential from the good. Now, like I said, we're here in a nice, comfortable building. These boys were right next to the furnace. They were away from home. Everybody else did it. They could have done it. But instead, they chose to stand up for their conviction, for their belief, for their trust in God. Now, the point of the whole lesson is, don't tell me you and I can't do that either. We can do it. It's been done before. It's being done today somewhere in this world. And it'll be done tomorrow if the Lord doesn't come. So there's the four answers. Make it a plain answer. No need for interpretation. Make it a natural answer. No need for the dramatics. Make it a fearless answer. Stand up for your belief. If you believe God is able, then God is able. Then make it an answer that's influential for the good. All right. Okay, verse 19 through 30. This is on your second page. The four in the fire. Back to Daniel chapter 3. Picking up in verse 19. Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace seven times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded certain mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their hosen, in their tunics, and in their mantles and other garments, and they were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire flew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was astonished and rose up in haste. He spake and said unto his counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire and having no hurt. And the aspect of the fourth is like a son of the gods. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace, and he spake, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you servants of the Most High, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth out of the midst of the fire. And the satraps and the deputies and the governors and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw that these men, that the fire had no power upon their bodies, nor was their hair or their head singed, neither was their hosen changed, or their or had the smell of fire passed upon them. Verse 28, Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel to deliver his servants that trust him and have changed the king's word and have yielded their bodies that they might not serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces and their houses shall be made into dunghills, because there is no other God that is able to deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So here we are, verses 19 through 30, the four and the fire. The first question, the king's reaction and response to the three youths, well, we can tell he's mad. But he's so mad, his facial features change. You can almost see him like a blowfish, all red in the face, cheeks puffed out, screaming, ranting and raving. Get that fire hot. Then he calls mighty men, point two on your study guide. He calls the mighty men. They bound them and they threw them in the fire, and the fire was so hot. Evidently, at the urgency of the king's command and seeing how mad old Nebuchadnezzar was, they weren't going to half-step about this. They grabbed those boys, they chunked them in there, and yet because of the urgency, they got too close and they died also. The king wanted the fire seven times hotter, so evidently they really piled the wood in there. And then verse 24, and this is point three on your study guide, the king's question, he's astonished, 34 and following. He is astonished. No doubt he had position where he could see the three young men being roasted alive. But notice what he says. The king was astonished and rose in haste, and he spake unto his council, Did we not cast three into the fire? He wanted confirmation. How many fell into the fire? There was three, king. Yet I see how many? Four. Now notice he says two. Well, there's six amazing things that he sees. Number one, they throw in three and he sees four. That's one thing. The second thing that he sees, they're not bound but walking around free. Now that lets you, or that at least implies, let me put it this way. It implies that the youths had been bound in chains, not just ropes. So they had been bound in chains because he's astonished that they're bound, that they're no longer bound. So there's that implication. And they're walking about. He sees four. Number two, they're not bound, but they're free. And number three, they're not trying to escape. They're just walking about in the fiery furnace. Number four, they're not being consumed by fire. The appearance of the fourth, the fifth thing, the appearance of the fourth was like unto the sons of a god. Now, the King James will say son of God. There's nothing in the text that would imply the son of God. Everything in the translation of the original text, as far as we have it, sons of a god. And if you'll notice verse 28, he will say there, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that he had sent his angel. So it appears that it was one who had the appearance of deity. But the Son of God is just added in by the translator. And number six, they're not frantically looking for a way out. They're just walking around. A little warm in here today, they're saying. In other words, the thing that Nebuchadnezzar is seeing, he is seeing three young men that he threw in there to be burned alive, to be writhing in pain, to be screaming in agony. He sees four. They're walking around, and they're letting God handle the situation. That's the lesson you and I can get out of this. You let God handle the situation. Remember, and you've heard me say this before, we are not a people who are circumstance controlled. We are a people who are God controlled. We let God handle the situation. One last thing on this being that was walking around with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There's a lot of speculation. Like I said, King James wants to make it the Messiah. And there are those that follow that thought. There are those that follow the angel of Jehovah, which oftentimes is compared with the Messiah or some kind of manifestation of God. But if you notice, especially when we get to Daniel chapter 10, you'll see Michael, the archangel. And there's a good reason to think that he is the one that was sent. Michael, we will see, he is the one who is sent to Daniel to make sense of some of the visions that he saw. And it would appear, although it's not a certainty, it would appear that the one that was sent to free the three boys, according to the context of the book, was Michael the archangel. Now, you can believe that. You can pursue it, you can do whatever you want to with it, but those are just some of the things that might help you in a discussion that you may get into, well, who was the fourth individual in the fiery furnace? Just go to Daniel chapter 10. Well, Michael came here, he could have came there, and that's all we can do with it. So verse 26, he bids them to come out. Point four in your study guide, verse 27. We're getting running out of time. What effect did the fire have on the three youths? No effect at all. They didn't even have the smell of fire on them. Anybody who's ever stood around a barbecue pit or burning a drainage ditch or something like that, the smell of smoke clings to you. Where I work at, they've got a ditch that runs through. It's an irrigation ditch, and every spring they burn that ditch. And every spring my old Jeep with its rag top smells like fire for about 3 or 4 days. I'll park it in the garage, you think the house was on fire. But the fire had no effect at all upon the three youths. Point five, the results of the incident we pick up in verse 29, where he says, well, let's pick up in verse 28. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel to deliver his servants that trusted him, notice, and have changed the king's word. Here we see the sovereignty of God asserted in the book of Daniel again. Remember, one of the reasons that Daniel was written was to show the sovereignty of God over the nations. So he has changed the king's word and has yielded their bodies that they may have not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Verse 29, therefore I make a decree. So now we have a new decree. At the first of chapter 3 we had a decree. Now he's changed that decree. Now we have a new decree. He says, therefore, I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made into dunghill, because there is no other God that is able to deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego in the province of Babylon. Now, notice he says, there is no other God. In chapter 2 and verse 47, the king answered unto Daniel, and he said, in truth, your God is the God of gods. He says the right words, but he's not a believer. He's not a believer yet. Next week, Lord willing, when we get into chapter 4, we'll see that Nebuchadnezzar does come a believer. Okay? All right, well, I'm going to let you go a few minutes early. Any questions?
There are those that think Daniel was in the fiery furnace. He wasn't, was he?
No, he wasn't. Nope, Daniel doesn't have anything to do in this chapter. Anybody else? All right, God bless you.